Dobry wieczór Państwu, dobry wieczór, witam serdecznie wszystkie panie. Dzisiaj mam jedno ogłoszenie. Prawa gej i lesbijek to prawa człowieka. Chciałbym, żebyśmy o tym pamiętali. Po tym małym ogłoszeniu przechodzę do audycji. Dziękuję, że zostaliście. Ci, którzy już mieli dosyć, wyłączyli prawdopodobnie nasze odbiorniki. Witam Was serdecznie w rozmowach w nocy. Dzisiaj będą troszeczkę inne rozmowy w nocy. Dzisiaj będą rozmowy w nocy w języku angielskim. Może kiedyś ukaże się tłumaczenie, może nie, trudno powiedzieć. Będzie z nami Mahmoud Amer, który to jest moim przyjacielem, który to jest inżynierem, nie wiem, ale tak naprawdę nie może uwolnić się od świata polityki, bo tak się składa, że nie wiem, jego rodzinne koneksje są bardzo związane ze światem polityki, która sięga nie tylko Stanów Zjednoczonych, ale przede wszystkim mieści się w Egipcie. A więc witam Was serdecznie. Będzie z nami Mahmoud Amer, człowiek wiary, też bym powiedział, wyznawca islamu, który na pewno nam też o tym troszeczkę opowie, jak to jest, czy czego mamy się nie bać, słuchajcie. Spróbujemy zniszczyć kilka mitów, stworzyć kilka nowych. Myślę, że będzie ciekawe. Serdecznie zapraszam Was do audycji. W tle uczci i dla szacunku dla wspaniałej osoby, która odeszła, dla Nelsona Mandeli, który zmarł w wieku 95 lat, który spędził 27 lat w więzieniu, który nie pił i nie palił, a pokazał nam, jak mamy żyć i jak mamy sobie radzić w tym dziwnym świecie, w tym dziwnym pokoleniu, w którym instant gratification, natychmiastowa nagroda są tak popularne. Czasami warto poczekać, żeby osiągnąć swój cel. Witam Was serdecznie w rozmowach w nocy. Fajnie, że jesteście. Witam wszystkich na czacie. Witam wszystkich offline, online. Witam Panią Elę z Facebooka i witam Pana Jerzego z Niemczech i wszystkich innych pozostałych moich wiernych słuchaczy. Dziękuję Wam, że jesteście. Posłuchajmy może naszego intro. Ja w międzyczasie spróbuję się połączyć z naszym gościem i będziemy razem. Dobry wieczór, witam serdecznie. Rozmowy w nocy. Grudzień, już prawie święta, słuchajcie. Pora się wyluzować. Pracuję zresztą na tym, tak się luzuję. Nie wiem, czy mieliście okazję słyszeć. Czasami mnie, Krawca i Martina można usłyszeć w poniedziałki o godzinie 14, o godzinie 20, przepraszam, w poniedziałki na enklawie www.enklawa.net. Już nam się udało nagrać kilka odcinków takich rady starców, rady starszych odcinków, to taki troszeczkę inny program. Polecam, słuchajcie, można się zrelaksować, a dziś mamy rozmowy w nocy i będziemy z naszym gościem. Rozmowa ta będzie odbywała się w języku angielskim. Porozmawiamy dzisiaj z Mahmoudem o islamie, polityce, religii. Będzie można także dzwonić, zadawać pytania. Mahmoud już jest z nami. Powoli łączymy się. Zobaczymy, jak to nam się uda. Technicznie zawsze jest to challenge. Słuchajcie, jeśli macie jakieś pytania, to ja jestem obecny na dwóch czatach. Na czacie enklawy.net, a także na czacie rozmowy.com. Ale jeśli macie pytania, to nie zadawajcie mi bezpośrednio na Skype'ie, bo już takie tutaj się otwierają okienka. Nie jestem w stanie ogarnąć wszystkiego, ale to nie jest istotne. Łączymy się z naszym gościem, zaczynamy i będzie naprawdę fajnie. Trzeba zamienić się na angielski teraz. Spróbujcie, będzie łatwo. Zresztą ten mój angielski to prawie jak rosyjski. Bawcie się dobrze, hej. Okay. Słuchacze z Torunia mnie pozdrawiają. Bardzo fajnie, że pozdrawiają. Cieszę się. A to był chyba wokalista zespołu. Okej. Okay. Hey Mahmoud.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fine, fine, fine. Is there any chance we can get a video of you or no chance?
Oh, we can.
Oh, that'd be terrific. So I can add for our viewers. Wow, look at you. You are the true engineer.
Beautiful, but
it's perfect. It's perfect. I just had the chance to introduce you, and part of the introduction was I mentioned to everyone that you are an engineer, and we are messy people. We have too much going on sometimes. We read too many books, we have too many wires. I don't know. bunch of junk, yes? Anyway, thank you so much for taking our invitation. I really appreciate you taking your time, but I couldn't pass this opportunity because I know that you just visited Egypt, and I'm sure you have some fresh information for us, and I would like to talk today in this like half an hour, maybe 45 minutes that we have with you. I would like to talk about politics, religion, and about life. And we spend many evenings talking about it. So I know it will be easy conversation for you.
Yes.
It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Let's start. Maybe you can help me introduce you a little bit. I just said that you are still connected somehow to the world of the politics in Egypt, because some of your family members are really close to this world, and you follow the news, you follow Al Jazeera pretty closely, and you read, and you're almost a part still of this life out there because all your family is there. Can you tell us what's happening and how you're doing and what you have seen on your last trip to Egypt?
Sure. Well, situation is very complicated over there. The country is completely divided between two groups. People who believe that what happened on the 30th of June was a military coup, and some other people who believe that this was a peaceful revolution by the people supported by the army. And it depends on who you are. And the way you look at it, it depends on where you're coming from. Whether you belong to the group that ruled, there was a ruling party, or whether you are a person. And I think, I mean, or whether you belong, you support the military coup. People interpret it the way they want it to be interpreted. But it's hard to tell which group is right. I believe both groups have legitimate reasons, but this is where it gets really messy and really sticky. Like, you can't tell who's right, who's wrong. That is in my humble opinion. I have no exact direction which one to believe. Both parties or both sides are claiming horrible things are done by the other side.
So this spring revolution, this whole movement started a little while ago. It's been like 2 years, I think, or more, when the whole...
January 2011, so yeah, it's actually 3 years, right?
3 years almost.
2012.
Yeah. I remember when we were sitting in your basement and watching Al Jazeera together and enjoying these whole changes, like affecting so many different countries. And back then, I remember having this honest conversation with you, and I said, oh, Mahmoud, it's going to take years before this whole thing stabilize. It's not going to be like that. And people always have a hope that change is coming, you know, the power is being exchanged between, I don't know, military and the elected officials, elected government. And we hope stuff going to stabilize fairly quickly, but that's not what happened in your home country, in Egypt.
No, I certainly believe, I mean, personally, I'm more tilted, a little bit tilted, but not much, by that was somehow a coup. It's a sit back, it's not a step forward. What would have been ideal, I think, is that the current ruling party, which was the Muslim Brotherhood, that they would have decided to go with an early election. Obviously, there was dissatisfaction from the people. They didn't like the way they ruled. And again, there's always controversy. Some people say that, you know, they were doing their best, and simply they were just being made to fail. Versus some other people say no, they are a complete failure and they are dishonest and they are bad. I think that's an extreme from both sides concerning this. So I think to sum it up, really, it's about having a middle way. people are going extreme in both directions, and there is no a single person in Egypt. I mean, that's the broad statement. I think there's a lot of people who tends to go on the extreme side rather than trying to focus on the middle. What's the middle way? What I do know for sure, for example, that the Muslim Brotherhood, I'm not a big fan of them as a government, as a ruling party. They failed miserably on many fronts. They've done things wrong, politically wrong. But I don't think they are immoral. I don't think they are bad people who deserve to be in jail or deserve to be killed or get rid of. They're not terrorists, as some people claim in Egypt now. The other side, they're claiming that they are horrible and they support violence, which is completely nonsense. That's not true, to say the least. On the other side, I think they did a lot of mistakes as a ruling party, the people that they have supported or they have showed up with and associated with. There's a lot of mistakes concerning politics and the way they approach the opposition. They didn't listen to them as frequently as they should. So they made horrible mistakes in terms of governing and politically run the country. But they are not thieves. They are not people who is looking to, to gain power and money, etc., and to be rich and wealthy by illegal means. And they don't deserve to be in jail. I don't think that president, he can be accused of stupidity, but he's not a person that could be accused of criminal act. And try to convince both sides, the extreme side on the Muslim Brotherhood, think that he's a saint. He never did anything wrong, not a single mistake. And on the other side, on the military side or the people side who support that military coup, say, "Oh, he's as guilty as worse than Mubarak."
Yeah,
which
it's
is
pretty
opinion.
Bad because people have a tendency, Mahmoud, to think in black and white kind of way. And I remember when the changes happened in Poland in '89. Before that, we had like 10 million party members, the Communist Party members, about 10 million people belong from 38 million nation. That's mean pretty much everyone belonged to the Communist Party one way or the other. When you had any, when you joined military, when you were a manager anywhere, you had to be a part of Communist Party. Then, a few years later, in like 91 or I don't know, 89, it's already starting. Everyone was joining the solidarity movement. And then we have this extreme, 10 million people belong to the solidarity. First from the communists, and they were the same people because we don't have other adult people who were like, didn't belong anywhere. Basically, people signed up for a different party. And you could see here also this kind of black and white thinking. Fortunately, we didn't have this kind of major fracture at that time. The communist government was willing to give up a little bit of the power and the influence, of course, keeping a lot for themselves still. Probably up to today, you could feel some influence of it, but the transition kind of went smooth. Unfortunately, what I see in Egypt, there was a moment when there was a power kind of struggle with the Mubarak, and that was kind of simple enemy to identify. And after that, I think where Egypt kind of move in to the place when there is no simple enemy. That's just like you said, yes? There's no one person who is 100% guilty or it's 100% fault for the current situation. Yes, there are two fractures. I understand there is a Muslim Brotherhood and there are these progressive or more like liberal people. And they kind of crashing. So when you went to the Egypt, 2 weeks ago, how the average Egyptian, how his or her life look like, how it's affected by this unstable situation right now? Can you share this with us? Are the schools open? Are the government open? I don't know, firefighters are there? How
yeah,
is that?
Yeah. I mean, the country continued to function as normal. I can tell you, safely tell you that I've been there for like 15 days. I've only saw demonstration twice. So in terms of life as usual or for Egyptians, I think it's the usual stuff. It's every day. There are problems, of course, with the economy and you know, living and all kind of infrastructure issues and so on, but they've been going on for so many years, so there is nothing new. There is no improvement, certainly. And that's, so things are just in normal life day as you, you know, normal life as usual. What you seem to see on TV right now, whether it's Al Jazeera or other channels, that oh, there are demonstrations everywhere and all that, I don't think that's the case. That's not happening. It seems like the media focuses on, oh, there is a demonstration, let's go and take picture there, or let's have a live broadcast of how big that demonstration is. But in general, life is as steady as she goes. That's basically, I didn't notice like a huge, you know, uncertainty or insecurity. I was feeling completely safe to a certain to a large extent.
Yeah. So, a few days ago, Nelson Mandela died, as you know. I think you like the man as much as I do. You know, he's a great symbol, and that was someone who really changed not only South Africa, but, you know, pretty much big part of the world, the way we what we think about the apartheid and how much attention he brought to this problem. Is there anyone like Mandela? Is there any leader of, I don't know, from any of the side that you could identify with today, or the people identify with? Some, I don't know, is there anyone in Egypt who is like that?
I think that's a figure like Mandela was a great man, to, from what I heard about him. He did certainly you know, switch strategy in his struggle to the right strategy eventually when he felt like it is time to go peaceful. He did start in a violent way, just like any revolution starts, and ultimately when he said, oh, now I have a way to peace and to put down arms and start to focus on that, he did accomplish. So I have a great respect for this guy. He did the right thing, the right moves, in the right time. Egypt needs one like him, and unfortunately I don't see any person in Egypt right now in the political figures that he can make that role or play that role. But that's certainly the what anybody would, reasonable and sensible, who cares about this country, is looking for. A figure like him who can unite the country. The country is so divided, even within the household. Division within the household. I can meet with different family members without mentioning names, and they are on the complete side of the aisle.
Wow.
And that's tough. Within the family.
That's so hard.
So you can imagine what is it like when strangers meet together in coffee shops and start talking and start reciprocating ideas, and they don't like each other.
Yeah, that's going to get crazy. Let me ask you some tough question. You know, we are friends, Mahmoud, but, and, you know, I said I'm going to spare this one, but, you know, I'm sure you will not get mad at me or anything, and you will have a good answer. I will ask, what do you think? Is a religion part of this problem? Are the religious people part of the problem? Is the way, I don't know, Egypt, as the whole pretty much Middle East, is, I would say, it's very religious, okay? Religion play a major role in people's life. Mm-hmm. Yes, probably part of the reason was the Mubarak being so not religious, people kind of, I don't know, celebrate as a part of the opposition to this I don't know, 8 years kind of way of running the country. They were developing big pushback towards that, and probably a lot of the people in Egypt today are dreaming about religious type of government, which, as you know me really well, I do not support. And but I'm curious about your opinion. What's the religion play? What's role right now in all this kind of conflict between these two fractures? Is that something that may unite people, or it makes exactly opposite, divide even more?
I don't think religion has anything to do with this. Religion is the back of the mind of the people. They think about it, but when they start to act, I think they act upon their knowledge and what they know and what they don't know. a rational person will act upon knowledge. And so to me, the main problem with the Middle East, main problem with countries like Egypt and that part of the world is literacy and ignorance. That is the problem. That is the problem of the deposed system. Education infrastructure, curriculums, etc. That is the real issue. You go to any country that doesn't have a good, positive education system, then the people of this country are very well prepared to be programmed and brainwashed into some type of extreme ideas, resort to violence or some kind of any other form of extremism that you can sell to them, because they're simply ignorant. They don't know their religion, they don't know their background, they don't know their history. Then it becomes easy to access their minds. So I don't think religion has anything to do with it at all. Even the Muslim Brotherhood, I don't think they had the concept of reviving the traditional Islamic values, which I think they are great values that talk about fairness, social justice, taking care of the welfare of the orphans, and there are great values in the traditional Islamic values. But the way they've implemented, it's not exactly what it should be, for example. Or some people might say that way. So it's ignorance, and then the second reason is ignorance, third reason is ignorance. Teach the people, educate them.
They just don't listen to each other. That's what you're trying to say, Mahmoud?
What?
Ignorance, they just don't listen to each other. Don't listen to each other. They don't try to understand each other, yes?
I mean, I'll give you one simple example. Remember the Taliban, for example, in Afghanistan. And that's kind of far away, but it's a good example. When they destroyed the statues, the two Buddha statues, and the whole world was crying about it. And certainly, I have no justification whatsoever that what they did is right. It was 100% wrong. You should not destroy a monument that has been living for years. It's a great human achievement. Why do you even mess with it?
Yeah, you're right.
And you can measure the same thing with Egypt. It has 33% of the world history after the Islamic conquest. There was not a single ruler or leader who promoted the idea of destroying all the old Egyptian artifacts. You know, so, but if you look and to see why they decided to destroy these two statues, is simply based on a general idea that is the right thing to do, but it
is
not.
So bad.
So many proofs in Iran, in Iraq. There is a lot of monuments that dates back thousands and thousands of years ago, way before the Islamic conquest, and not a single monument was touched. So what
That's the ignorance. That's a little bit better example of ignorance. You're right.
Ignorance of their tradition, ignorance of their religion, and the idea that we are doing the right thing, we need to be on the extreme side. Some sort of background, no, that's not how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to be tolerant of others. Monuments of other religions is quite acceptable, as long as people are not actively fascinated by it to the point of worship, for example.
Of course.
Then why you even mess with it? Why you even touch it?
Even if they worship, it's their choice, so we should respect that. Anyway, let me move a little bit, Mahmoud.
Sure.
With one of the questions, moving away from Egypt for a moment, a lot of our listeners, most of our listeners are in Europe. About 40% are the Polish people who are living outside of Poland. They mostly live in Great Britain, they live in Germany, many of the European nations, countries. And, you know, there's this new, I think, paranoia or propaganda, maybe better, against Islam and Islam taking over the world and Europe losing its identity, and we should all be scared of the Muslim people and Islam, and it's bad and all this stuff. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. What would you say to these people who are hearing this sick propaganda that they should be afraid of of your religion, and I can say that because I know, you know, I watch you in Ramadan when you fast, and I hear you when you talk to your children about the God, you know. What would you say to these people who are hearing all this propaganda? You don't have to tell it me, it's okay, this religion will not help you, or it's not contagious and will make you sick. What would you tell them to convince them that there's nothing wrong in Islam?
Sure. Well, that goes back to the same problem that I just described in the Middle East. If there are any fear of Islam in Europe, it's because of ignorance of Europeans. And with all due respect, I do respect Europeans a lot, and but I'm being frank and I'm being honest about it. If you are afraid of a religion that teaches common values, that should not steal, that should not kill, etc., etc., and you're afraid of it so much, and you don't read about it and you know anything about it, well, I'm sorry to deliver you the bad news. You are ignorant of that religion. You haven't read it. You haven't read what the values are. And you need to teach yourself. Then, only then, you'll realize, this religion is just same as Christianity, same as Judaism, teaches there are very common, broad-based...
And you respect your wife. Because there's a lot of myth about Muslim treating wrong the wives. You know, I have heard myself, and I know that you treat your wife well, and you don't have to convince me, but I like to pinpoint some stupid myths that are circulating.
So let me give you that example. According to European custom and tradition, the wife changes the name, right, as soon as she becomes married. And I believe we have that same custom in the United States. So your wife, currently Cuba, is carrying your last name. Is that correct?
Yes, she is.
Okay. Now, do you have any idea that in the Islamic tradition, it is not encouraged? It's not forbidden or it's not illegal, but it's not encouraged for the wife to change her last name? That she should retain her name? And, of course, you're aware that my wife's last name is different than mine. Now, yep. The question is, why is it that way in our tradition? It's because to make the distinction that the wife is not simply some sort of a transfer that gets to the husband and she becomes part of him. No, she has her own identity. She has the right to maintain her last name, and she should.
And she even walk? Your wife walk? You know? And okay. I see you cooking. So also, it's just I like to point that stuff because there's these horrible stereotypes about Muslims and what they allow the wife or they don't allow and what they do, which are completely silly. Especially, I think there's a lot of myths like that in places like Poland. I have to say it's not as diverse as rest of the Western Europe, at least not diverse yet. But of course, Mahmoud, here we're saying really nice stuff about Islam and about the culture. But of course, there are exceptions. There are crazy guys with bombs, and sure, they call themselves Islamists too. They make a lot of harm, and you know, like in every religion, we have a crazy guys in the state that we live in, Virginia, Christians who burn abortion clinics and terrorize the doctors. Who do the abortion, for example, and they are being also called terrorists by FBI and other organizations. So we right. do have terrorists on every side of the aisle, and we can't forget about it. But let's talk about this a little bit darker side of that aspect. I would like to ask you again a tough question. What are you scared? What are you afraid of? What are your fear regarding the Islam cultures? Is there anything you are afraid of? Is Islam under some kind of attack from inside or outside? Are the crazy people taking over maybe or having more influence than ever before? I just want to leave it to you. Is there anything in Islam, in the culture, in the religion, and in the people who practice that you are afraid?
Well, certainly in the past few years, I mean, in the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s, there was a rise of an extreme element in the Islamic world in general. No one can deny that. Any person who is really constructive needs to acknowledge this and deal with it as a problem. But this is always the case when, if you look at within the context of literacy levels in these countries, the rise of extreme elements in religion is proportional with the level of ignorance in these countries. The only way out for countries to progress, to lessen the extreme element of within, is education. Education in every aspect, religious education, social education, typical education schools and universities. And this is the problem.
So even education for women, Mahmoud, of course, joking.
For women, what people don't know, that the first scholar in Islamic tradition was a woman. That the people who carried most of the translations from Latin to Arabic were women. Hmm. That women are not obliged to really work in the house, but rather seek knowledge, because woman is the one who teaches the new generation, and she need to be well educated so can transfer to her offsprings. I can go on endlessly, and these are well founded within the Islamic tradition.
Okay.
As I was trying to, you kind of cut me short about that last name thing that I gave as an example, but imagine for a moment that it is in the Islamic tradition that the wife need to change the name to the last name of the husband. The whole Western world will be like, look how oppressive we are. Now I have the guts to stand up into the Western world and tell them, excuse me, you are changing the last name of the wife simply because, based on the British common law and tradition in the 19th century, and it's time that you do something about it and keep the last name of the wife as is, because by being married to someone, she doesn't lose the status that she was of certain lineage. So I'm sort of like bouncing the ball back to you.
Yes, yeah. Maybe one day we're going to evolve. But my wife really wanted my last name, you know?
Sure. I mean,
because, there's so much identity theft in America. And if you have such a unique last name like mine, you're covered, you're safe.
Right, exactly. And I mean, my wife and I discussed this a lot, and I told her, it's up to you. I said, I'm proud of my name, I want to keep it as my last name. I said, well, you're going to run into some troubles, and we run into sometimes some troubles. Are you guys married or not? I said, yes, we are. So how come you're not carrying the last name? I mean, we face that quite a bit, but to a point that it's not an issue for us, because we're married, we're fine, we have kids and all that, so...
Yeah, it is interesting. It's interesting,
I mean, I'm just trying to point about the perception.
Yeah, it's just like people are scared of gay people, and people are scared of lesbian, people are scared of Muslims, people are scared of any type of minority or majority, whatever we kind of function around. I remember a friend of mine grew up in Guam, and he, as a white person, he was a minority. Yes, there's way more black people on Guam than white, and he was challenged because of that. Then he switched the states when he moved from Guam to the Virginia, and all of a sudden he switched the sides, and that was like also eye-opening experience for him. And that was a while ago, when America was looking a little bit different than now. So it does change, and I have one of the last questions prepared for you, because I know you are a busy family man, and this is a time when people have dinner in America. But before I let you go, I would like to ask you, what do you think about the future? Maybe not what's gonna happen, but more likely what you would like to happen, going back to the Egypt. And there may be even whole Middle East, this whole mess that's going on, including Afghanistan. I know there's no one recipe for all these nations, but you may think about something. So it's still a very unstable region. One of the show I was making in previous shows, I was talking about corruption. The level of corruption there is like horrible. I mean, I'm talking about the whole Middle East, including the Africa. Poland is not doing so great either, but what do you think? What would you like to happen in the future for all this region to kind of recover and get to the place where they deserve to be? I mean,
yeah, it's a good question. You have to be always remain optimistic. This is just a process, an internal struggle process that will take years. I believe, some people that I've heard on TV at the beginning of the revolution said, right after January 2011, at the beginning when people were in the streets and everything was peaceful and very nice, they said, he said, and I'm referring to my uncle, my own uncle, he was vice president at some point, said, what you've seen is the best of the Egyptians coming out in these squares at that time. And everybody was mocking his comment, saying, oh no, we're going to be always fine and we're going to continue to cooperate and work together. We'll never have a mess or anything messy like that. 2 years later, I guess he was right. Because things changes, but agendas start to show up after a certain period of time, and that peaceful coexistence will have periods where that coexistence is not there, and it's rather it clashes and conflict. But I think as people evolve and learn and get over this step by step, I think Egypt has a great future. I have no doubt in my mind that they're going to go through this and they're going to figure it out somehow. Maybe a figure like Mandela, as we just were talking about, somebody who can unite that country into one group for one purpose, and that is to care about the development of this country and to moving it forward. The thing is, I know for sure that what we are in right now is way better than a dictatorship that lasted for 30 years. I know that even with that current messy situation, it's even better than Mubarak eras and then even the eras before him. This is a step in the right direction. They just need to figure out how to, you know, do that sausage that results in a product called democracy.
Yeah. Somehow
figure it out, and I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, there's all these growth pains, kind of like, it's not really growth, because the Egypt is not growing anymore, but this transitional pain, where people are adjusting to the new place, and unfortunately, the whole region is difficult, so it's hard to take an example of your neighboring countries to kind of, oh, hey, we want to be like, maybe like Turkey. I don't know, probably a lot of people are saying that in Egypt. And right. Some people will like look at more towards the opposite direction. But, you know, I will go at the end to the religion, because believe or not, Islam and Quran, it's kind of, I don't know, fascinating for a lot of people from Poland, because they have very limited access to these different cultures. There's expression that in Poland everyone is white and Catholic, and this is not derogatory, it's just an expression, because we are the same pretty much. So what I'm thinking is kind of closing up slowly, what do you think when you look at these two religions, and I know you know Christianity pretty well, and you know Quran and Islam, this is something that you live and breathe. When you compare this to a religion and you see people who are kind of dedicated to them, is there more thing that are in common, or more things that are, I don't know, making difficult to coexist? Because we do have kind of substantial clash now, especially in Europe, of these two very, sometimes very different points of view, different sets of beliefs. But in the same time, I do see a lot of similarity that definitely this coexistence could build based on. So what do you think can these two religions, especially in Europe, coexist okay? Or can they, or the conflict will only escalate? What you think?
No, I think they can coexist. And there are numerous examples of coexistence in the history that we can reference to, that multiple religions, multiple cultures existed in one place, one time or another, even on the continent of Europe, in Andalusia, in Islamic Spain, for 3 or 4 centuries. Christians, Jews, and Muslims lived together in peace in the Holy Land, in Jerusalem, which is now Israel. People lived, Jews, Christians, and Muslims, in that land for so many centuries in harmony and peaceful coexistence. We have examples in Turkey where people lived under the Islamic rules, Jews and Christians and Muslims as well. We have numerous examples. There is no doubt that the West has pioneered that tolerant movement of multiple religion, multiple cultures. I am one being grateful to the United States allowing me to come and live among people with different religions, different colors. We all celebrate this in the United States. And I only wish that Europe, including Poland, with all due respect to you guys, to learn from the United States how diverse it is and how we deal with our tensions quite openly and frankly, and we don't tolerate any type of paranoia or fear. So there are examples in history, and we are living examples today in the United States, in countries like England, and even I'm sure Poland to a certain extent have that kind of tolerance. In Canada, everywhere, you will find that example. What the other countries now, I mean, what I was trying to say, that the roots of that tolerance, perhaps if you trace it, you will trace it back to Islamic traditions. It's ironic. But now, if you compare what is current, the current scheme in the Middle East, are they tolerant, more tolerant than the Western Hemisphere? The answer, I'll be kidding myself if I tell you we are more tolerant. No, we're less tolerant. But we need to be more tolerant. We need to go back to our roots, to our Islamic tradition that was propelling us into tolerance and accepting the other. You know?
So, and the same apply to atheists, I hope too, because we can't forget a lot of people are atheists these days, especially in Western Europe, which I think the number is growing. They can also coexist, I think. There's no problem. I remember your story with your Jewish friend. If you can kind of bring up, I think you have few Jewish friends, which is kind of cool for me, because again, it destroyed this horrible stereotype that people who, the Muslims cannot talk to Jew, or no, they cannot have a lunch together because they're gonna bite each other. Yes? But, you know, there are myths like that. Is that true? You cannot have a lunch with the Jewish people? My name is, you know, Jacob, Jakub, come on.
Absolutely not. It's not an issue to talk to a Jewish person. You have to understand, people are sentimental or emotional because they're fighting about land. If I have a conflict between me and you, a civil conflict in court, you think I'll be tolerant of you when I see you? Even in the most tolerant, most educated people, if Cuba and I have a conflict in court, would you think I will meet you in the street, I'll be so happy to see you? If I'm smiling and as soon as I see you, and an act reflect by human, he's going to be like, oh my God, that's the guy who just was decimating me in court trying to make his point. So naturally, when you have a conflict about land, about property, about whatever you name it, you will have tension. And the only solution to that is to break that ice, is to talk and sit down and try to find a way. You can go on endlessly for a conflict. Good luck. A generation and then a generation and continues to have that struggle. You did this, you did that.
Yeah, Sting, you know this singer, Sting, he used to sing something very, what kind of matches what you just said. Like, I think he was singing about that the Russian mother love their children too. So, doesn't matter if there's a Russian mother or Jewish mother or Polish mother or there's a Muslim family, they all love their children. And they last thing that they wanted to do is to die, for example, fighting some stupid war about some piece of land, or about the way we believe, or we don't believe for that reason. But you know, I think you get to the point really well. So I have a question from the chat I'm trying to read, so give me a second. Okay, so one of our, this is more like a statement from one of the person who is watching the show, that he said that it's true, until the 20th century, Jews and Arabs coexist not only peacefully, but also had a very good business relation. So that will kind of prove the point that you said. There was a time where people kind of, I don't know, they were much better for each other than what's happening these days.
Let me tell you something about Egypt. I mentioned these names, and they look like Jewish names. Sidnaw, Shamla, Omar Effendi. These three were the most successful three retail companies in Egypt before that whole 1948 trouble, right? Mm-hmm. And these were all Jewish businesses. They were the most successful people of retail in Egypt. Of course, 1948 started in all that. We know all that history, so we're not going to go over it again. But the point I'm trying to make, yes, businesses existed. People lived in relative harmony. There were never an issue. Worthy mentioning is that 1948, you know, that whole Israel establishment is what caused that tension to really boil, and it's I hope that somehow it gets resolved. I think if you solve this, you've solved half of the problem of the world. Hello, you still there?
Mahmoud?
Yes.
Okay, I'm trying to add someone to the group call. Okay. I will try to add someone to our callers, one of the viewers who's trying to call us. It may disconnect us, or I may recall, so stay patient with me. Martin?
Hello.
Mahmoud, can you hear Martin?
Yes, I can.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. It's not that serious. Well, it's not funny either. It's just something I'm interested in. I had a plan like this. I mean, winters in Poland are very cold, so my plan was to go to some place where there's hot or warm and spend winter there. And my plan was to go to Egypt and find some hostels or something like that and live there for 3 months, for example. So do you think Egypt is a good place for something like that? Is it safe right now, and is it even possible? I've heard there are lots of hostels, but I don't know if you can spend winter there.
Oh, most certainly. I mean, the weather difference is diverse and huge. I was wearing short sleeves there, although we were in.
You just came, Mahmoud, yes, like a week ago.
Exactly. Yeah, I came on December 4th back to the States. So the weather, you're gonna love it. Sometimes it gets cold, don't get me wrong, you know, we're still in the winter, but
how cold is it
in Finland or Poland or even Virginia right now?
Well, good then. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how cold is in winter, Mahmoud?
I'm sorry?
How cold is in the winter in Egypt?
I mean, you're talking about 17, 20 Celsius.
This is great. This is,
this
wow,
is cold for them.
My goodness. Okay, yeah, is it safe though?
Worst case, maybe you're talking about a lot. It never goes sub-zero.
Wow, nice. Yeah, so is it safe, though? Is it safe to live in a hostel?
In terms of safety, I mean, I'll be honest. I don't want to give you a blank statement and you feel like, oh, this guy was... I have to tell you, in my 15 days of being there, and I've been on the street for quite a bit, I only encountered two demonstrations. I was far away. there was no harm. I mean, tear gas, I smelled some tear gas or something like that. But if you are to stay in a place where there is resort or some place where a hotel or all that, I think we Egyptians right now are working really hard to attract tourists. So they provide a good safety and all that. I think you will
And it's cheaper, right? So the price is cheaper.
There are good deals.
Excellent. Oh, that might be a good idea after all. So another question. Which city would you recommend to go to?
Well, if you're staying for 3 months, I mean, you have a good opportunity to go into multiple places. I will certainly recommend into, especially in the winter, it's ideal to go to Upper Egypt, where there is Luxor and Aswan, where you can see the history sites, mm-hmm. historical sites. That would be a very good place to spend at least 2 weeks there. You'll have plenty of time to look at all these historical places.
Okay, and how about internet? I really need internet to live. So it's like, blood for me. So is there internet everywhere?
There is, to a certain extent, yes, there is an internet. It might not be as reliable as we enjoy it here in the United States, but it's certainly there and you can get it. And certainly in hotels, just like as you go here in any hotel, you have a Wi-Fi.
Okay, and how expensive is Egypt comparing to Europe or States?
Well, I was living like a king with $1,000 or $2,000. I spent 2 weeks. I came back I don't know how to tell you, but you multiply times 7.2 and that you get the Egyptian currency. Mm. And the prices are almost one-to-one. Like, for example, the 1 pound of tomato here is $2. It is about maybe £3 or £4 in Egypt.
Wow.
So, and then you multiply times 7. So really it ends up like the pound of tomato is like 30 cents for you versus you buy it here for $2.
This is nice. Do you know about prices of living, of a hostel or some room? Is it possible to rent a room for 3 months somewhere?
I'm sure there's a way. Maybe your best option is if you are staying and you want to establish a base in one city is to rent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
3 months, like one studio. I'm sure you'll find that available. You got to weigh your options, you know, whether staying in a hotel versus you're going all over the place. So you need to have a hotel in every place you go.
Yeah, but I need something cheap. So hostel maybe is backpacker place, you know, for something that doesn't have, it's not very comfortable, but it's cheap. So, or rent a room.
And unfortunately, I can't speak of that because I have family, so I stayed with them.
Oh, okay.
But in terms of, I mean, living in general in Egypt and food expenses and all that, I mean, you can have... I had dinner for 6 people in one of the best seafood restaurants in Alexandria. Mm-hmm. And the 6 people cost about $100. All of them.
Wow.
This is compared to like going to a really fancy place here, like the top of the top. Will you pay $50 a person or $60 a person?
Okay, so it's a good place to go for winter.
Yep.
You're good. Okay, thanks. That was my question.
Okay, thank you so much, Martin.
I'll be listening. Okay, thanks.
We're going to hook you up with some place in Egypt. That's fine.
Yeah, it'd be great for winter.
No problem. We'll do.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, this is better now.
Okay, sorry. I just want to wrap up, just finish up, and I just want you to say goodbye to our listeners, viewers, and the tradition that we have in this show, we have a wish, so you can make yourself one wish, and we'll try this wish to happen, okay? Could be related to our conversation, to what we talk about, but doesn't have to be, okay? This is the little tradition that we have here. And thank you so much for your time and for everything you said in the show. That was great.
Sure. I really wish for a better world. I mean, that has no hunger, no fear, no extreme in any kind of shape or form. That's really what I wish for. And we've gone a long way. We evolved from the caveman all the way to now. We still got a lot to do. But ultimately, that's what you strive for, is a more peaceful world that we live in. So, That's my really my wish.
That's a great wish. Okay. I think Nelson Mandela will approve your wish.
Absolutely.
He's probably listening someplace from up there. Okay. Thank you so much. You go back to your family. I really appreciate all your time. And this interview will be posted soon. So you may say hi, last hi to your family in Egypt, because they may be watching soon.
Sure. I say hello to them. Be safe. And you're going to get through this. And you're going to be much better than before. Just be patient and endure it.
Of course. I know Mahmoud is with you guys, with all his family there in Egypt, okay? Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a great evening, Mahmoud. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Whoa! I to by było panowie i panie na tyle. Tym oto sposobem kończymy nasze interview z Mahmoudem. Dziękuję bardzo za uwagę. Dziękuję słuchaczom offline. Przypominam tylko, że jeśli podobało wam się to, co robię, proszę wspierajcie tą audycję. Wspierajcie poprzez, nie wiem, subskrypcję na YouTubie, poprzez jakieś tam lajki na Facebooku, a także wspierajcie enklawy.net. To taka ciekawa inicjatywa medialna, która powstaje. Możecie wejść na www.enklawa.net. Tam też możecie wspierać. Nie ma chyba opcji, żeby wspierać audycję Rozmowy w Nocy, ale jeśli chcecie wesprzeć, to po prostu wspierajcie Enklawę przez najbliższy rok. Ja bym chciał, żeby właśnie tam szło wsparcie, które przeznaczacie dla programu, który ja produkuję. Dziękuję wam bardzo serdecznie za uwagę. Przypominam, za tydzień będzie fajny show, będziemy na żywo, dowiemy się trochę o dziennikarstwie może, ale przede wszystkim dowiemy się, porozmawiamy o problemach kobiet i przemocy domowej, i tym razem będzie po polsku. A więc gdzieś tam szukajcie mnie na Facebooku, od czasu do czasu pokazuję tam ogłoszenie właśnie, co będzie. Jeszcze raz wam serdecznie dziękuję, trzymajcie się, dobranoc, i zapraszam was następnym razem na żywo na Rozmowy w Nocy, www.rozmowywnocy.com, www.enklawa.net. Hej, 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 dzięki wielkie. Więc enjoy, ja będę z wami za dokładnie 2 minuty i 39 sekund. Posłuchajcie sobie.
Pędzimy gdzieś, nie wiemy bez celu. Nikt nas nie goni, bieg ciągle trwa. Jak nakręcone pluszowe misie, na monitorze okropna gra. Nie ma tu sędziów, nie ma wygranej, i tylko smuta daje nam sił. Ktoś czasem tylko krzyknie do siebie: recepta na życie. Wyścigi szczurów i woń mamony, klapki na oczach i jeden cel: poczucie władzy, zmysł ustawienia, gdzie w danej chwili należy być. Recepta na życie. Kwiaty, dyplomy, ulotna chwila, nie ma już nas. W kieszeni zmięta, recepta na życie, jednostajne, tik tak, tik tak. Recepta na szczęście, na miłość, na życie. Trzymasz, 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 trzymasz. We'll be right back.
Hej! Witam serdecznie!
Cześć, Kuba.
Witam, witam.
Miło cię słyszeć w ogóle.
Ja też serdecznie witam. Dodzwonił się do nas chyba wokalista Eclectic. Jakbyś mógł troszeczkę bliżej mikrofonu albo podkreślić sobie... Już chyba dobrze.
Już lepiej? Dobra.
Już lepiej, okay. Jasne. Witam serdecznie. A więc, kogo mamy na linii?
Kamil z Eclectica, dokładnie. Wokalista, dokładnie.
Super, super. Cieszę się. Widzisz, że tutaj no... Zakochałem się w tym, co tworzycie, tylko musicie trochę więcej zacząć tworzyć, żebym nie musiał powtarzać tych utworów.
No miło słyszeć, wiesz, miło słyszeć słowa, że właśnie mówisz, że ci się nie nudzi nasz materiał, tak więc powiem ci, że to, co przyjdzie jeszcze, to na pewno ci się już nie znudzi.
Nie, no jest rewelacja, naprawdę macie coś w sobie i ja się też cieszę, że już chyba drugie rozmowy z nami jesteś, czy może trzecie, trudno powiedzieć.
Drugie, trzecie, no tak, tak, tak. Nie zawsze, jasne, wiesz, nie zawsze jest czas, żeby cię śledzić tutaj, no ale staram się, kiedy mogę.
Jasne, jasne. Dużo się dzieje w tym polskim internecie. Wy jesteście, rozumiem, jakbyś opisał swoją muzykę, to nie jest rock. To, jak to się nazywa, ten typ
muzyki? Ja bym to nazwał alternatywnym rockiem, chociaż wiesz, też nie do końca.
Okej, okay. Okej. Okay. To jako wzrastająca gwiazda alternatywnego rocku, co tam słychać w polskim świecie muzyki i nie tylko, powiedz? Jak to jest być tobą, pewnie? Śpiewasz nam tutaj, teraz się podpytamy, jak to jest być.
Jak na razie powiem ci, Kubo, tak, zespół tak naprawdę istnieje od roku i jak na razie ciężko nam rozpostrzeć skrzydła tak naprawdę, jeżeli chodzi o rynek muzyczny polski.
Trudny
Ale to
jest.
Wiesz, trudny, bardzo trudny jest. Tym bardziej, kiedy wiesz, kiedy teraz już naprawdę nawet ci te stare wygi rocka, czy też ogólnie muzyki polskiej walczą o to, żeby po prostu, żeby wiesz, jakoś normalnie grać za jakieś normalne pieniądze w Polsce.
Jasne. To samo właśnie, wiesz, miałem okazję gościć Frogen Dog, nie wiem, czy ich znasz, pewnie słyszałeś. Też taka młoda gwiazda wzrastająca i dokładnie to samo, poza anteną i w trakcie i na antenie mówili, że po prostu no, rynek jest bardzo ciężki, żeby się w ogóle przebić, to już właśnie tak jak Chemia teraz, nie wiem, czy miałeś okazję ich dzisiaj w rozmowach usłyszeć. Oni właśnie już po prostu chyba mają dosyć tego trudnego polskiego rynku i w Stanach w radiu już ich zaczęto grać gdzieś. Myślą, że im będzie łatwiej tutaj.
Nie dziwię się tutaj.
No, powiedz to, z takich wyzwań największych, czy z jakichś może planów, które macie, co tam, o czym wam się marzy jako bandowi?
Co nam się marzy? Nasz ten ojciec założyciel się śmiał, że chcielibyśmy zagrać na Wembley, ale właściwie jest to największym chyba teraz marzeniem, to by było zagrać koncert z orkiestrą symfoniczną, ale zobaczymy, wiesz, marzenia trzeba spełniać, nie?
Jasne. No wiesz, ten ojciec założyciel to ma niezłe szczęście, że ten twój wokal podchwycił. To jest bardzo ciekawa sprawa.
I no tam, udało mu się.
No udało mu się, szczęście, że jak nie wiem, mam nadzieję, że dobrze ci płaci za to wycie, stary, bo jest rewelacja. Po prostu fajna energia i ten alternatywny rock, ale też z drugiej strony taki trochę romantyzmem zalatuje, takim dziwnym. Ja tam kiedyś u ciebie na czacie podpisywałem, że to taka jakiś alternatywny rock w stylu, nie wiem, a z drugiej strony leci jakimś starym, dobrym małżeństwem, tylko że w rockowej wersji, no nie wiem, coś w tym jest, tak?
Czy wiesz co, to może też po części jest ukryte w tym, co tak naprawdę się kryje tam, wiesz, jeszcze pod moją skórą. Ja jestem strasznie wrażliwym człowiekiem i to wiesz, i to po prostu wychodzi tutaj przy tym samym śpiewaniu i oddawaniu tekstów w utworach.
To jest, tak. Jest naprawdę fajna sprawa. Czyli na Wembley byście chcieli zagrać, a z takich bardziej realistycznych, gdzieś będziecie grali niedługo, bo może ktoś z naszych słuchaczy miałby ochotę usłyszeć. Skąd w ogóle pochodzicie i gdzie operujecie, na jakim terenie gdzieś?
Z polskiego piernikowego miasta. Mówi ci to coś?
Torunia, od ojca.
Dokładnie.
O, z Torunia, to fajne. No fajnie. I jakiś koncert macie zaplanowany niedługo? Coś tam się kręci? Czy nagrywacie?
Wiesz co, pod koniec roku szykuje się koncert w Gdyni, ale to jeszcze na razie nic za dużo nie mogę powiedzieć.
Jasne. Mhm. A jeśli chodzi o płytę, gdzie jesteście? Coś myślicie nagrać?
Wiesz co, 3/4 płyty jak na razie jest nagrane. Jak dobrze wszystko pójdzie, to skończymy ją na początku roku.
No super.
Przyszłego, no super. Ale to tak...
Super. Ja właśnie szukam w internecie takich skarbów jak ty, czy właśnie Chemia, czy Frog and Dog. Takie grupy, które jeszcze się nie ukochały za bardzo z ZX-em, żeby miał ich niektóre legalnie puszczać. A z drugiej strony widzę fajny potencjał i jest naprawdę rewelacja, bo czasami brakuje takiego jakby świeżego powiewu, a jestem przekonany właśnie, bo właśnie wy jesteście tego przykładem, że polska scena jest pełna takich talentów, tylko że kiepsko z promocją. Czy to jest największy problem dzisiaj? Jak to jest?
No niestety, to jest największy problem.
Marketing chyba, co?
Marketing, no tak. W głównej odsłonie marketing. No i jeszcze wiesz, jeszcze tak naprawdę, no chyba tutaj to takie określenie szerokie plecy, to chyba jest potrzebne w dzisiejszych czasach.
Ha, ciekawe. Znaczy znajomości chodzi, tak?
No właśnie, takie niesmaczne słowo, znajomości, tak.
Jasne. Różni ludzie nas słuchają. Wyobraź sobie, ostatnio miałem też kontakt z taką kobietą, która nie wiem, buduje jakieś ogromne media w Stanach Zjednoczonych i z nią miałem okazję porozmawiać, a ten mój show to tutaj, wiesz, tutaj jakbyśmy byli, nie wiem, no w jakiejś takim, w kilku, nie wiem, może klasach by nas wszystkich zmieścił, tutaj słuchających nas online. No może trochę więcej klas bym potrzebował na tych offline, ale nie jest nasz duża grupa. A miałem okazję właśnie ostatnio rozmawiać z kobietą, która, nie wiem, zajmuje się, nie wiem, multimilionowym jakimś przedsięwzięciami. Gdzieś tam coś tam do mnie zagadywała właśnie o rozmowach. Tak sobie. Czyli wiesz, no ja was puszczam. Czyli macie potencjał, a nóż komuś wpadniecie w ucho. Mam nadzieję, że przyczynię się do jakiegoś takiego pozytywnego marketingu waszej grupy i byłoby to dla mnie zaszczytem, bo naprawdę super. Jakiś jeden bilet na pewno zapracuję, jak będziecie gdzieś grali.
Zapracujesz, tak.
Jasne.
A na pewno będziesz miał, wiesz, na pewno będziesz, jeżeli będziemy gdzieś, może jak nam się uda właśnie w Stanach zagrać, to wiesz, to na pewno bilet masz.
Jasne, siedzenie w pierwszym rzędzie. Tak, okej, okay, super. Nie, no to jest ciekawe właśnie dla mnie, że właśnie to, co Chemia robi, że teraz gdzieś można tutaj słuchać, że ludzie po prostu, ciężko im się przebić w tym polskim markecie, że bardzo taki jakiś hermetyczny. To właśnie Frog and Dog mówił, że no, oni naprawdę próbują i to walczą, to są eksperci od marketingu i starają się bardzo promować i mimo to, że dobrze się znają chłopaki na tym, właśnie Mariusz, którego miałem okazję gościć, też jest w archiwum rozmowa, to polecam słuchaczom. Po prostu facet wie, co robi i mimo to po prostu jest im trudno się przebić, nie? Znaleźć jakiegoś takiego, nie wiem, czy to sponsora, czy promotora. Ostatnio coś tam robią z Pepsi, a wy na razie też szukacie, jesteście w takim etapie, w którym, nie wiem, czy sami to wszystko prowadzicie? Jak to wygląda?
Czy jako tak, to tak, sami, ale wiesz, no mamy niby jakiegoś tam lokalnego tutaj sponsora, ale to wiesz co, to jest naprawdę nic takiego wielkiego, tak więc no to i tak wiesz, cegiełka po cegiełce idzie.
Jasne. No. Super, dziękuję ci bardzo za ten telefon, to dla mnie rewelacja. Mam nadzieję, że będziesz się do nas przyłączał. I co, cóż bym mógł innego puścić po rozmowie z tobą, jak nie Eclectic?
Okay. Dzięki bardzo.
Najdę, jasne. Dzięki, wielkie uściski. Trzymaj się, miłego wieczoru.
Hej.
O, super, panowie. No teraz muszę ten Eclectic puścić, posłuchajcie, był z nami właśnie wokalista tego zespołu. Za chwilę będę odbierał więcej telefonów, ale deszcz jest rewelacja. Deszcz jest. To właśnie to stare, dobre małżeństwo w wersji alternatywno-rockowej. Słuchajcie, bawcie się dobrze.
Za oknem pada deszcz i jakoś smutno jest.
brunatne niebo wpływa pod mój dach. Nostalgia cicho tak w pokoju sobie śpi. Ja szukam sensu wspólnych naszych dni. I tylko głuchy płacz tak delikatnie myje twarz.
Halo?
Tak się boję moich
Halo?
Słów.
Jesteśmy
tak się boję twoich słów.
To się zmutuje na
Nie rań mnie. Ciągle pada deszcz. W bramie rudy pies, mokry kulawy ciągle drży. Pod parasolami ze swoimi żalami szarzy ludzie ukrywają się. Ciągle pada, pada deszcz, ściany mokre są od łez. Lustrze wolno, to nie czas. Ciągle pada, pada deszcz, pada deszcz. Zapłacze się na śmierć. Wielka fala wetrze się przez drzwi i zatopi moje sny. Te cudowne i te bardzo, bardzo złe. Pod mój dach nostalgia cicho tak w pokoju sobie śpi. Ja szukam sensu wspólnych naszych.